Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. While investigating the miraculous healings occurring among the pilgrims, Tesca has discovered several clues which suggest that Molly Fletcher is somehow involved. Chapter 33. Husband? Yvette's voice at his ear brought Tesca instantly awake. Something is going on in the camp this morning. Tesca sat up, nodding. Rose holding a blue light in a stone forest, helping me hunt for demons, he muttered. A monk with two faces, trying to put masks on our heads. Yvette touched his forehead.
What are you saying? You're not developing another fever, are you?
No, I'm catching a dream, Tesca replied. Rose, blue light, stone forest, hunting demons, monk with two faces, masks. He repeated the words a few more times, then nodded. It was a trick Moira had taught him, something he hadn't thought about for a long, long time. One morning, Aiden had tried to tell Moira about a funny dream he'd had, but he quickly became frustrated when he couldn't remember much of it.
Dreams are creatures of the night, Aiden, Moira had told him with a gentle smile. They disappear in the light of day.
Then her smile turned sly.
But there is a way to catch them. The moment you wake up, say everything you can remember out loud.
That's it? Aiden had asked, fascinated.
That's it, she assured him. If you say it out loud, you turn it into a story, like the ones your father tells. You remember all his stories, don't you?
She laughed at his eager nod.
That's how you catch dreams, Aiden. You turn them into stories.
It's all become easier to recall since my healing, Tesca thought. Speaking Terrandon, my father's stories, memories of Moira and Rose, my life before sailing into the Empire. It's not like I forgot them. It's more like they were far away, in a distant library that takes a lot of effort to visit. Now the library's a lot closer, the memories in easy reach. He shook his head, glad for the change, but wishing he knew the reason behind it. You said something's happening in the camp?
Yes, Yvette said, sitting back on her heels, studying him. The pilgrims are in an uproar.
A riot? Tesca asked, fearing that Kerla had decided to leave the abbey.
No, they're cheering, she said, giving him a wry look. I think we are going to need another cot in the barn.
Another miracle, Tesca said. Another blessed. Yvette raised an eyebrow.
You don't look surprised.
I'm not, Tesca replied. Something happened last night. I wasn't sure what, but if there's been another healing, it's starting to make sense.
What time did you get back? I intended to stay awake, but sleep overcame me.
Let me guess. That happened roughly 40 minutes after I left.
Yvette frowned, thinking. Yes, that seems about right. How did you know?
How are you feeling this morning?
She yawned. A little tired, but I'm all right. What is going on?
I'm still putting it together, he said, rising from the cot. Right now, we should probably get out there and greet our newest member. Yvette gave him an annoyed look, but nodded, taking his hand and letting him pull her to her feet. The rest of the barn was already stirring, the noise from the campsite a dull roar outside.
Triad be praised, Barza called out to the others. It sounds as if there's another of us this day.
He gave a good-natured sigh.
It's getting crowded in here.
Perhaps there are some spare cots in the farmhouse that Kelisandra would deign to bring over, Sidwa grumbled, sitting on the floor near the dining table, a thin blanket over his legs.
He rose with a wince, rubbing at his lower back.
I wonder who it is, Harlan asked, his eyes wide. Every time I hear the shouts and prayers, I wonder if it's someone I know, someone I spoke to.
He fidgeted in place, his feet tapping.
I hate waiting for them to be brought up here to find out.
Let's find out for ourselves, then, Tesca said, clapping Harlan on the shoulder and heading for the stairs.
Go out there? Harlan asked. Now?
His question was silently echoed in the expressions of the others.
"It is traditional for the Blessed to await the arrival of our newest brethren," Merritt declared.
At the top of the stairs, Tesca turned back to look him in the eye. The Blessed didn't start appearing until 3 months ago. That's hardly enough time to start waving around the word tradition. Merritt's eyes narrowed.
"It's what we did for you. The least you could do is the same for our newest member."
Tesca nodded, conceding the point. "You're right, that is the least I could do. I want to do more than that."
"It's not your turn," Merritt began.
"By whose word?" Tesca suddenly barked, interrupting him.
"Yours? Kelisandra's? Did she heal me? Did she heal any of you?"
He swept his gaze across the group. "I would rather be out there than cooped up in here, and I know we all feel that way. Some of you seek to go out into the world to spread the word, others to go home and give testimony to the Triad's blessing by living a quiet, simple life. Some wish to remain here, tending to the other pilgrims, but none of you appreciate sitting in here day after day until it's your turn to go outside, shepherded by 2 sword priests, and dragged back in here the moment you step outside Kelisandra's boundaries." He saw some nods among them, despite their fear.
"No meat last night," came a quiet voice he didn't recognize.
Heads turned to regard Gwynnen, her head bowed lower than usual. Through the long hair hanging in front of her face, Tesca saw her dark eyes flick up to meet his, then dart away.
"Bringing your family and Bela's man in here. Not what she wanted."
Her voice was rough and slurred from long years without speaking.
"So no meat with dinner. Next time will be worse."
Tesca knelt down in front of her, looking up into her face. "I won't deny that Kelisandra will resist changing the system she's devised, but right now there are as many blessed in this camp as there are sword priests. More, in fact, once our newest brother or sister joins us." There was a stirring among the group, heads turning to count their numbers. "I'm not saying that we have to directly confront her, but I believe the Triad didn't want us to be treated like holy relics, paraded about and then sealed back up in a vault. We have to let her know that."
"Mother of Steel protects us, she does," Gwynnen muttered. "Protected us from the Kefi back home, now from the monks."
"I'm sorry, but I don't believe that either. I spoke to one of the monks yesterday. He seemed like a decent man, and I promised that I would speak to him again today." "I'm not going inside the abbey," he assured the girl as her eyes widened with fear, "but I'll take his measure for myself and not simply accept what others tell me that measure is." He rose, returning to the stairs. "There is a new member of the Blessed out there. Like Harlan, I can't wait to find out who it is, so I'm not going to. Anyone who wishes to come with me, I'd be glad for your company. Anyone who doesn't, I'll not force you. It's your choice. Just as you chose to make this pilgrimage in the first place." Yvette and Sidois had already moved through the group to stand at his side. Harlan, bouncing up and down with nervous energy, finally grinned and joined him as well. Bela looked up into her husband Graham's eyes as she leaned against him. He gave her a silent nod of agreement, and they too crossed the floor to stand at the top of the stairs. Merritt, Claude, and Gwynnen remained where they were, Merritt glaring at them, the other two staring at the floor. Tesca looked to Barza and Trien. "Care to take a walk?" The two senior-most of the Blessed shared a look.
"I'll go," Barza told her with a rueful chuckle. "You know, keep the youngsters out of trouble."
Sidois made an indignant noise at the term youngster, which everyone ignored. Drien nodded, touching his arm gently.
"That's not a bad idea, but it might be good if someone stayed here and did the same thing," she added, glancing at Merritt. "At the very least, we need to make some room for the new arrival."
"Good idea," Barza said, moving to join Tesca and the others.
They descended the stairs and walked through the barn to the front door. As Harlan and Sidois pushed both sides of the door open, Tesca winced at the bright sunlight that poured over them.
"Are you all right?" Yvette asked.
"Fine," he said in a low voice, rubbing his eyes for a moment as the pain faded. "Just bright out here this morning." He raised his head to see one of the sword priests, Rorik, trotting up to them from his post a short distance away.
"Something wrong, blessed ones?" the acolyte asked, looking concerned.
"Not at all, brother," Teska replied, smiling broadly. "By the joyous cries of the brethren in the camp, we know the Triad has sent another pilgrim to join our ranks. We are going to welcome him."
Rorik blinked, completely bewildered. Teska could see he had no orders for this situation.
"That's... not..."
"Acolyte," Teska said calmly and firmly before the man could make up his mind, "that is where we are going, and in the midst of the faithful, we have nothing to fear. However, some of us are remaining behind in the barn to prepare a place for the newcomer. Remain at your post. Keep them safe."
Rorik looked uncertain, but he did not try to stop Teska and the others as they walked past him toward the tents and the growing clamor.
"Nicely done, my son," Sidwa said in a low voice, "though it likely won't last long. At some point he'll head to the farmhouse for new orders."
"Long enough for us to meet the new blessed, I'd imagine," Teska replied. "I suppose we'll just follow the noise."
There were only a few pilgrims in the first row of tents, those too infirm or weak to rise unaided. Their mouths gaped open at the sight of so many blessed at once.
"Good morning," Yvette said to one of them, kneeling down next to the elderly woman. "We heard the cries and came to see what has happened. Has another one of us received the miracle?"
The woman nodded her head feebly, but her smile was sad as she looked to the man lying on a blanket next to her.
"I fear that Martin has not lived to see it."
Barza came forward, kneeling down next to the still figure.
"He passed during the night?"
"In his sleep,"
the old woman wheezed, sounding as if she might not be far behind him.
"We'll send someone to collect him shortly," Barza promised her, "and to look in on you."
As they moved on, Teska began to notice more still forms in the tents they passed. Barza and Harlan stopped to check each pilgrim as they went. Most were like the old woman, alive but too tired to rise. Others, however, never responded, even if gently shaken.
"This is what you were asking about, isn't it?" Teska said to Barza. "The number of folk who've died during the night."
"Yes," the older man replied, looking grim as he rose. "And like this, in their sleep. No coughing out their last breath or moaning in pain. They just don't wake up."
"The tithe," said Harlan in a quiet voice.
"The tithe?" Sidwa asked sharply. "What is that?"
"Nothing we can prove," Barza replied. "It started as something Conrad and Drian noticed the morning I was healed. More folk being carried to the graveyard than usual. Death's not uncommon here. At least one or two pass on every week. But during that one night, there were 6 dead, all like these."
"Anything in common?" Teska asked. "Did they eat the same food or sleep near each other?"
"No. The only thing they had in common was they were among the weakest and oldest. And like the others we're seeing, there were others that morning who were more tired than usual. Some of them died as well over the next few nights. Didn't have the strength to keep drawing breath. Then, nothing. Those who still lived regained what strength they'd had. An odd occurrence, but no one could see a cause for it. It wasn't until near 2 weeks later, when Harlan was healed, that it happened again. Only 3 folk dead in their sleep that time, though."
Barza shook his head.
"That was when Conrad and Drian started to wonder if there was something going on. I didn't agree, and neither did Harlan. We hadn't been around long enough to see the pattern."
"Not until Claude was healed," Harlan added. "There were 10 dead that morning, and at least 5 more who died a day or two after that."
"As you say, the tithe," Teska said. He looked at Bela, who was clutching her husband's arm. "Do you believe in the tithe?"
She frowned, looking uncertain.
"Only healed a week or so before you, I was, so I'd never heard of the tithe until Drian told me about it the day after I came to the barn. The morning you joined us, when Barza asked me to find out how many died during the night, found Graham that day and told him about it."
She squeezed her husband's hand.
"Go on, love. Tell them."
Graham swallowed hard, still in awe of speaking directly to so many of the blessed.
I'm a healthy man, hungry at times, but there's not wrong with me that a good meal won't fix. Brought my wife down here after we heard the Mother of Steel herself was journeying to St. Ravino. Well, healthy folk here are put to work, they are. Most of my days here I've been digging. Ditches, latrines, and graves. That last hasn't been too often, there's a blessing, but the day Bela was healed, I helped dig 3 graves. All 3 of the folk we lowered in looked like that fellow we saw back there, still sleeping. Another digger told me that's happened at times. Every other day or so a new grave'll need to be dug. Then there's a cluster of 'em all at once.
And no one has mentioned that before? Yvette asked him.
Graham shrugged. Plenty of work to be done around here. Not always the same folk digging the graves each time. Most lads who do field work for a few days get offered a chance to join a foraging party.
He gave Bela a sheepish smile.
But I stayed. Don't mind digging, and I'd not put any further distance between us.
Bela's face softened as she leaned against his shoulder. Tesca felt a sudden twinge of guilt. How many died the night I was healed? Bela shrugged.
None, far as I could tell.
You seem to buck the theory, Barza mused with a wry smile. But then you were dying from a stab wound. Different sort of thing than the rest of us. Perhaps that's the difference.
Merritt went out as well. You didn't ask him?
Merritt, Barza muttered. Well, you can see how he takes to ideas that didn't come from him. But also, he only arrived here a week or so before he was healed, so he never saw any bodies collected for the graveyard, and now he doesn't pay any attention to such things.
Is he the only one who doesn't believe in the tithe?
Well, seems Bela's starting to, and Claude knows, but he doesn't like to talk about it. The idea that his healing was paid for by the lives of 10 others scares him. And as for Gwynnen, he sighed, we've not even brought up the tithe with her. Only 4 folk died on her night, but 2 of them were her parents.
He shook his head.
And she's so terrified of all the noise and attention she gets when touring the camp that she's only done it once, and only when Drienne came with her.
What was wrong with her? Sidois asked.
Suffered from seizures all her life, Barza explained. Damn near chewed her own tongue off before she was 5 years old. That's all healed now, but you understand why she's not one for conversation. Frankly, I'm surprised she spoke to you this morning.
She's scared, Tesca acknowledged, and like as not she's right to be. Kalisandra's not one to be crossed lightly. But what you're telling me about the tithe only convinces me we have to do something to break this standoff between the monks and the sword priests. There's more going on here than anyone realizes, and we won't figure it out unless we can get everyone talking to each other. I think the Blessed can make that happen.
How?
Harlan asked. By getting everyone to listen to us, monks, pilgrims, and sword priests. And the first step toward that goal is to get out of the barn and the confinement Kalisandra's placed over us. We have to take control of our own movements. Bela and Harlan looked nervous, but did not object, instead looking at Barza for direction. The older man studied Tesca for a long moment, then nodded slowly.
All right, seems we've taken that first step. What's next?
Tesca gestured toward the sounds of jubilation ahead. We find our newest member. They picked up their pace, moving through the rows of tents, drawing more attention to themselves. The outlying edges of the crowd began to notice their approach and burst into a set of fresh cheers, ecstatic at the sight of so many of the Blessed at once. Pilgrims parted with awe, leaving their hands outstretched to brush against their living icons as Tesca and the others went past. The noise was deafening, but Tesca had learned to endure it over the past few days. With a wide smile, he slowly pushed forward, touching every hand he could with his own, giving back the grace they had imbued him with. Then, all at once, the crowd fell away in front of him, and he was face to face with the newest Blessed. The pilgrims around them went silent with anticipation. The man was taller than Tesca and at least 20 years older, and it took Tesca a moment to recognize him, as he had been lying prone yesterday when Tesca had met him.
Oswald? Son reborn! The new Blessed cried, falling to his knees and clasping Tesca's hand. Thank you! Thank you for this gift. I will follow your words for the rest of my life. I swear that I shall ever strive to be worthy of them.
No, Oswald, it wasn't, Tesca stammered, but the grateful man looked around to the enraptured crowd.
Blessed me, he did, Oswald shouted, took my shaking hands in his and stilled them. Said if I follow the triad, there was a place appointed for me. And when I awoke this morning, my tremors were gone.
He pointed to a thin blanket on the ground, now trampled by countless feet.
From that very spot, I stood without aid for the first time in years.
The crowd's sudden clamor crashed upon them like a wave.
Such miracles await you all! Believe in the triad! Follow their words!
Oswald released Tesca's hand and looked up into his face.
Command me, son reborn. What would you have of me?
Stand with us, Tesca said, surrendering to the moment. There was little point trying to correct Oswald on what had actually happened when Tesca wasn't sure what that was. He hoped that later there would be a chance to speak more privately with Oswald and get some details about last night. Take your place among the blessed. Sidwa came forward and helped Oswald rise, drawing him into a firm, welcoming embrace and kissing him on both cheeks. He then beckoned the other blessed to step forward and do the same. Yvette came up to Tesca and took his arm in hers.
Is he telling the truth?
Somewhat, Tesca explained. I did meet him yesterday and gave him a blessing. It was just before the monks approached me. He glanced down and saw that she was watching him. I didn't actually come back here last night and heal him, if that's what you're wondering.
No, you went out to find Molly, did you?
No, Tesca said, some clues falling into place. You realize that's the second time you've fallen asleep just before someone was healed? First me, now Oswald. She blinked.
You're right, and by the look on your face, that's significant.
It might be. I dare say nearly everyone in camp fell asleep last night, or at least became drowsy for a part of it, and some of them didn't wake up. Yvette went pale.
The tithe?
Yes, and Molly's connected to it somehow. I don't know how, precisely, but I'm sure of it. The whole picture wasn't complete, but Tesca was confident he had enough to go on. When I met Oswald yesterday, Molly was already there, tending to him. Liam said that her legs had been broken as a child and never healed properly, but I saw her legs when she fell down, and they were healthy. She's been healed at some point, and she doesn't want anyone to know it. And last night, he recalled the strange magic he'd encountered and resisted, watching all those minute portions of life being drawn toward a single location. Now he realized that single location was almost exactly where they were standing, where Oswald had been sleeping. Last night, Molly wasn't in her room. She was out in the camp somewhere at the same time you fell asleep.
How can you possibly know that? She demanded.
Daughter, Sidwa called. Come greet our newest brother.
With a frustrated sigh, Yvette turned away from Tesca to embrace Oswald fondly. Now Barza stepped up to him.
Well, we found him. Now what?
Now we'll start touring the camp as a group. Head in the general direction of the Abbey Gate. Barza nodded, seeing what Tesca had in mind. He relayed Tesca's words to the others, and slowly they began to move. Their progress was halting and erratic, the crowd before them giving way unevenly, the less mobile acting like rocks in a stream, diverting the flow around them. But steadily, the walls of the abbey rose higher and higher. Oswald stayed close to Tesca, his soldier's instinct prompting him to stay in front of the Sun Reborn and guard him, but this only slowed their progress further, as he was the one the pilgrims most wanted to see and touch today. Wholly unprepared for being the center of attention, Oswald was quickly overwhelmed and frequently looked back to Tesca for reassurance. Tesca pressed forward to stand at his side. "It's all right," he said in Oswald's ear. "Do what I do. Touch their hands, but don't grip them or they won't let go. And don't stop moving. They won't let you start again."
Reminds me of battle, the old soldier said. Everyone pressed so close. The noise.
He looked vaguely horrified at making such a comparison. Then he grinned at Teska.
At least there's no blades in their hands.
Very true, Teska agreed. It will get easier. He looked across the sea of heads before them, but every time he spotted a woman with black hair, it turned out to be someone other than Molly. Then, with relief, he saw Brother Hollem making his way toward them, accompanied by three fellow monks, one of whom Teska realized after a moment was female. He steered Oswald and the other blessed toward them. Hollem smiled warmly at Teska as the two groups met in a sea of pilgrims.
You came, Travis!
As I said I would, Teska replied, offering the monk his hand once more. A susurrus of disquiet rippled through the crowd as Hollem accepted it, but Teska raised his other hand to calm the onlookers.
Take heart, faithful ones. I am not leaving you. Rather, I am welcoming Brother Hollem and his fellows as our friends. They mean us no harm.
He leaned in close to Brother Hollem. Are you someone who can make a deal on behalf of the Abbey? Hollem recovered quickly from his surprise, looking Teska over carefully before replying.
I may negotiate on behalf of the Abbey, yes. However, any deals we strike will require the Abbot's final approval. Will that suffice?
For now. Teska took a deep breath, then plunged ahead. Is the Abbey in a position to offer further assistance to the pilgrims here? Food, supplies, assistance with planting and harvesting? Hollem's eyes narrowed.
Perhaps.
But you need assurances, Teska said, voicing the monk's unspoken thought. You won't give everything you have without receiving something in return, is that it? Kelisandra's broken arrangements too often in the past.
As you say, Hollem replied, we are not willing to contribute to this settlement without having a say in how it shall be managed.
He looked over the assembled group of blessed before him, curious.
And we must be allowed to ask questions of those who claim to have received healing.
Those who claim,
Oswald bristled, his face reddening, but Teska laid a hand on his arm.
Peace, brother. You offered me your service.
Our calling requires us to ask questions,
Hollem explained, smiling gently at Oswald.
It does not require you or anyone else to answer them. That is entirely your choice.
Oswald did not seem to know what to make of that answer.
For my part, I will answer your questions to the best of my ability, Teska said to Hollem, and I hope that my fellow blessed will do the same.
Barza stepped forward.
I will.
A moment later, Harlan, swallowing hard, joined him. Sidwa came forward next, followed by Yvette. Bela looked to her husband for support, and when he nodded, she too stepped forward, drawing him with her. All eyes turned to Oswald, who looked as if he was about to bolt. Oswald, they won't hurt you, Teska assured him, and if you don't want to speak with them, no one will force you. The tall man shook his head.
Where you go, son reborn, so shall I.
Whispering a quiet prayer, he stepped forward.
An excellent beginning, Brother Hollem said to Teska. We understand that putting such trust in us is not easy. What do the blessed seek in return?
Food, Teska replied, or perhaps seed for planting.
We can provide both, Hollem said. Our resources are not infinite. Opening our stores to the camp will mean careful rationing for everyone, especially if more are coming.
He smiled at the blessed.
If we work together until the harvest, however, there will be food in plenty for all.
Oh, indeed? Barza asked.
Hollem laughed.
Oh, yes. Putting our knowledge of farming into this many hands, I expect a harvest more bountiful than any you have seen before.
I look forward to that. Teska said.
As do I, Hollem replied. Now, might we ask some questions of you?
Certainly, Teska told him. Why don't we go back to the barn? It will be quieter there. As the monks nodded in agreement, he looked at the other blessed. We don't all have to go back. Some of us should probably remain out here and tour the camp as usual.
I think I'd best come back with you, Barza sighed,
The others are more like to listen to me if we bring some monks with us.
I follow you, Sunreborn,
Oswald stated.
All right, I'll stay out here, Bela replied.
Tesca could see that despite her earlier promise, she wasn't quite ready to answer the monk's questions. She wanted to see how it went with some of the others first. Harlan shrugged.
I'll come back. Maybe we can convince Claude or Gwynnen that the monks are our friends now. Then more of us can come back out here and spread the word.
An excellent suggestion, Sidois said, clapping the young man on the back. I will begin to do that at once.
Tesca and Yvette caught his gaze and nodded. The old pirate had demonstrated his skill at manipulating the crowd more than once, and they would need the pilgrims on their side once Kelisandra learned of this new arrangement.
All right, Father, Yvette said, taking Tesca's hand. We'll see you later.
Their progress back out of the camp took little time. The pilgrims did not press in around them as they had before, shying away from the monks.
You said you had been stabbed, Brother Hallam asked Tesca.
You're just dying to get started on these questions, aren't you? Tesca replied, grinning to let the monk know he wasn't offended. As you say, it's your calling.
Indeed, and these are questions we have long been prevented from asking, the monk replied. The four of us are asking these for our entire community.
Are you a physician? I've heard that all the monks study those fields that interest them.
My fellows here are physicians, Hallam replied. I have studied some medicine, but as you guessed, the primary reason I am out here is seniority. The abbot felt that it was important to always send at least one monk into the camp with the authority to speak on his behalf.
So, you speak with the abbot regularly, Tesca said. Could you take a message to him? Today? Hallam looked amused.
I dare say I'll be speaking with him the moment I return to the abbey. By now, someone will have informed him that I'm still out here, talking directly to you. He's as curious as the rest of us. What is the message?
It's complicated, Tesca replied. Perhaps I could write something down for him.
As you wish,
Hallam replied, gesturing to one of his fellow monks, who had a bag slung over his shoulder.
We always have some paper and ink on hand.
He looked up at the barn ahead of them.
How many of you live there?
11 now, with Oswald joining us.
Really? We thought he made it 12. We've kept note of all the new faces we've seen moving into the barn.
Is Conrad here? The female monk asked. I used to visit him many times, but since he was healed, I haven't seen him.
Now Barza looked more closely at her.
I remember you. Sister Jaina, right? You were the lass who kept bringing out those odd shoes for him to wear.
Jaina's face broke into a wide smile.
Yes, that's right. I was trying to find something that made it more comfortable for him to walk.
He spoke very highly of you, Barza told her.
But you speak of him as though he is no longer here, she said, disappointed. Is he dead?
No. Well, no, we don't think so. What I mean is, he was fine the last we saw of him.
Barza broke off, seeing that his words were only bringing Jaina more anguish.
He left the camp over a month ago, wanting to go home.
Home to Ardenvale, Jaina said. He told me how much he missed it. The father grant that his journey is complete.
May it be so.
They walked up the path to the barn, where Rorik was waiting. He stiffened at the sight of the monks among the blessed, his knuckles turning white around the quarterstaff. Tesca was surprised the acolyte was still at his post. He'd expected the man to either have left to get new orders, or that there would be more sword priests here to confront them.
Rorik, he called out, I assure you that none of us have gone inside the abbey, but we have agreed to answer the monks' questions in return for food and supplies brought to the camp. We believe we found a way to feed everyone without having to forage from our neighbors.
Rorik nodded, relaxing his grip on the staff, but still regarding the monks with suspicion.
As you say, blessed one.
Is everything all right? The acolyte shrugged.
Too many changes, too fast. But as the sun reborn, I'll trust your judgment.
Tesca smiled. I understand your concerns, but you'll see. This will be a good thing for all of us. Rorik nodded again, stepping aside to let them pass into the barn. As they entered the dark space, Teska realized two things. First, the other blessed were not there to greet them. And second, Rorik turned out to be a far better liar than Teska had expected. The barn doors suddenly closed behind them, Teska hearing Rorik slide his quarterstaff through the outside handles, sealing the exit. Then a half-dozen shapes rushed them from the corners of the barn and the empty horse stalls. Teska settled into a fighting crouch, ready to grab the first quarterstaff he could get his hands on, when he saw the gleam of steel in their hands. The sword priests surrounded them, blades extended.
"Surrender!" Donal called out, "or be cut down where you stand!"
"What is the meaning of this?" Teska shouted, turning in place. He saw Donal, Padraic, Danis. Then he recognized Desmond, Timon, and Braylon, and realized that they had not gone down to Maipor with Angus as he'd been led to believe.
"You dare take up your blades against the Blessed?"
Donal made no reply.
"Secure, Mum," he called out in a strong voice.
A moment later, they heard footsteps in the loft, steady, confident, and Kelisandra Fletcher descended the stairs, her own sword hanging from her waist, a red tabard draped over her white clothes.
"Take up our blades against enemies of the faith we do, Teska Sicarius."
Her eyes sparkled with triumph, catching Teska's reaction to the name.
"Under arrest you are, for heresy and willful congress with demons."
"This is outrageous!" Brother Hollum roared. "You have gone too far this time, Kelisandra. When the abbot hears of this..."
"Silence, heretic!"
Padraic shouted, slapping Hollum with his free hand, but keeping his attention and sword directed at Teska.
"What's wrong, spy? Not willing to defend him this time?"
"Put a sword in my hand and find out," Teska told him, "unless you're afraid of me." The corner of Padraic's mouth twitched into a smile, but Donal's voice brought the exchange to an end.
"Enough, Padraic. Baiting you into killing him, he is."
The priest stepped up and looked at Teska with a satisfied smile.
"Stand trial for his crimes, he will."
And in the next moment, Oswald put his fist in Donal's face.
"Son reborn!"
the old warrior cried, pressing his attack, grabbing for Donal's sword to wrest it from his grip.
"Oswald, no!"
Teska yelled, but it was too late. In one smooth motion, Padraic pivoted, thrusting his sword into Oswald's side, whirling back to level his blade at Teska an instant later. Oswald sank to his knees as Donal pulled himself out of the man's trembling grasp. The old veteran turned his head, meeting Teska's gaze. His expression was more surprised than angry, but as his eyes turned glassy and lost focus, a faint smile formed on his lips.
"Son reborn, await your orders. I will at the final muster."
Then he slumped to the ground and lay still. Donal rubbed his jaw where he'd been struck, looking down first at the dead man, then back at Teska.
"Answer for that, you will," the priest said. "I didn't kill him." "You damned him. Died unrepentant, he did. Your heresy, the last words on his lips."
He raised his voice, addressing the acolytes.
"None of the other prisoners are to be harmed," he barked, addressing his men. "Stand trial, they will."
"Where are the others?" Barza demanded. "Drian, what have you done with her?"
"Secure upstairs," Kelisandra informed him. "Safe, for now. Need to determine how badly you're tainted, we do."
"Tainted? Tainted by what? What are you talking about?"
"Magic," Kelisandra pronounced. "Your healing was a trick, done by the elf hiding inside the abbey. These miracles were all a lure to bring the faithful here for corruption. Determine if you lot were victims or accomplices, we will, after the abbey secured."
She swept her eyes over the prisoners, calm and confident, then frowned.
"Not all here, Donal. Three missing, the young wife and her husband, and the old silver tongue with the missing fingers."
Padraic swore and headed for the door.
"I'll find them."
"No time," Kelisandra snapped. "Proceed with the plan, we will. Pluck them from the crowd later."
"Aye, Mum."
Padraic pulled Sister Jaina out of the group and stripped her brown robes off, leaving her shuddering in her small clothes. Then her wrists were secured with cord, and she was forced to sit on the floor next to Oswald's body as the next monk was extracted.
"This is madness!" Hallam shouted when it was his turn to be disrobed. "You cannot seize the abbey with so few men!"
"No fortress is secure if they open the door for you," Kelisandra replied, saying nothing more until all four monks sat half-naked on the floor of the barn, their limbs tied. "Now, bind the others."
One by one, Tesca, Yvette, Harlan, and Barza had their hands tied behind their backs and were forced to sit on the floor with the monks.
"Timon, you're shortest. Try the girls' robes on."
With a grin, the acolyte sheathed his blade and pulled Jaina's robes over his head. The fabric stretched tight across his shoulders and revealed the lower half of his shins, but Kelisandra nodded in satisfaction.
"Won't fool them close up, but doesn't need to."
Braylon, Padraic, and Donal picked up the remaining robes and put them on. Kelisandra's smile widened, looking at her troops with pride.
"Hoods up now. Ah, perfect. Four good little monks, all in a row. Angus," she called up to the loft, "send him down."
More footsteps sounded above, and a moment later, Merritt came down. The slender man wasn't hurt, but his normally haughty expression had been replaced with one of terror, his hands bound in front of him. He froze, going pale at the sight of Oswald's body, but he jerked into motion again as Kelisandra beckoned him with a crooked finger. When she drew a dagger, Merritt flinched, relaxing only slightly when she cut his bonds.
"All right, you little milkblood," she told him. "Been wanting the whole camp listening to you. You've your chance at last. Do as you're told. It'll be remembered at your trial."
She gestured at Oswald's body.
"Put one toe outside the plan. You'll get worse than him. Clear?"
Merritt made a hasty nod. Kelisandra raised her head, her eyes shining with an eager gleam.
"Fought many battles, boys. Had many roles. Been blacksmiths we have, putting our foes between the hammer and anvil."
There were some chuckles and agreements among her men as Kelisandra began to walk among them.
"Been farmers we have, harvesting the enemy in their sleep to save the folk of Two Stone Pass."
She met the eyes of every one of her troops, clapping them on the shoulder or taking their hand in a fierce grip.
"And repairmen we've been, fixing the gaps and mistakes at countless outposts we visited. But, boys, we've a new role today. Surgeons."
The sword priest stirred at this, nodding.
"Saw the heresy in this place the moment we arrived, we did," Kelisandra went on. "The monks pray only to the Father, breaking the unity of the triad." "Put the son and daughter inside rooms, they do," Padraic snapped,
to which several of the acolytes muttered agreement.
"Aye,"
Kelisandra called back, her own voice rising, fanning the fire.
"Sitting on their fat backsides, reading their precious books. Sending us out here, saying they need their peace and quiet."
She shook her head.
"No, the real reason for that we do. Don't want us underfoot, discovering their true plan. But we have, boys. We have."
She took a deep breath, her acolytes hanging on her words.
"There's an elf in the abbey. Some of you've seen her. One of you's had a tussle with her."
Rorik nudged Padraic in the side, grinning.
"The one healing the pilgrims, she is, making them ready to believe anything," Kelisandra continued.
She pointed at Tesca and Yvette.
"And these, her accomplices they are. Stagger out of the woods outside Maipur, the man near death from a belly wound. Some of you saw that wound, but now you know that was the elf's magic, an illusion."
"She can change her face. She can make a man look near death easy enough," Padraic called out.
"Aye, Padraic, and you'll get another chance against her. That's a promise. So, these three come among us, calling themselves the Triad Reborn, they do, twisting scripture to turn the faithful to heresy. All of a sudden, the man who's near death rises whole and hale."
The acolytes stirred at that, fixing Tesca with murderous glances.
"A trickster shell game," Kelisandra called to them. "All it was,
an infection, and one like to spread. The simple folk get taken in by these false miracles, accept the authority of this false triad, turn away from the citadel they will, and instead seek guidance from the abbey.
This brought a wave of growling denials from the acolytes.
But then we arrived, lads, by the guidance of the sun, uncovered this heresy we have, this rot, and it's up to us to cut it out before it can spread. This day, it's surgeons we are.
Her troops nodded in fervent agreement.
Sane surgeons at their work we have, Kelisandra went on, all of us. At times it's us they've worked on. Others, it's been a comrade on the table that we've had to hold down.
There were nods all around, sober and grim expressions.
Not pretty, Kelisandra said,
her voice dropping, her pace slowing, forcing her troops to turn their energy inward until they trembled with it.
Surgeons take no joy in their work, but they don't flinch when time comes to put the blade to flesh. Remember, boys, it's the clean cut heals the fastest. It's the steady hand and single stroke serve the patient best. Remember, what we do today saves us all. The pilgrims who stand blind on the edge of heresy, the citizens of Maipur who turn their backs on us, your brothers and sisters back home facing the Kefi. What we do today saves them all. This day, we are surgeons.
The barn was silent. The acolytes stared up at the Mother of Steel, their eyes wide, gleaming with anticipation.
It's time, Kelisandra said. Let us pray. Enemies at hand.
Until the job's done, only the steel speaks.
As one, all of the sword priests drew their blades and knelt before her. Kelisandra raised her own sword over them.
Father, she said in a near whisper, guide our hearts.
Her men remained silent as she spoke both call and response.
Daughter, take our pain.
Then she smiled, and with a quick, flourishing salute to her men, sheathed her blade.
Son, give us strength.
As one, the acolytes rose to their feet, sheathed their swords, and turned toward the barn door.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.